Hi, I'm Matt Ward, and welcome back to episode 7 of the Running Industry Alliance podcast, where we delve deep into the running industry, its key sectors, and people and businesses within those sectors, unearthing new ideas and looking at themes such as sustainability in the industry, emerging technology, focusing in on brands and the people, and also a plethora of other topics to give you some insight into the running industry. Joining me on the podcast today will be, of course, my co-host Bex Richardson, who is one of the co-leads at the Running Industry Alliance with Jonathan Midwood. And today we'll be chatting with Andy Kane, founder of In The Now How, an organization equipping businesses and individuals with skills to boost mental fitness and resilience, creativity and innovation. Bex, thanks for joining me once again on the pod.
Hi, Matt. Thank you. Good to be here.
Good to see you again. I know you've been working hard to bring us some really great guests to the RIA podcast over the last few months and in the future. And today's guest, Andy Kane, he's got a great story and, of course, his business In The Now How, and basically how he's tackling a really interesting sector and a topic.
Yes, it's really interesting. Andy and I have actually been in the industry a long time, and we're actually quite a parallel kind of career at that point. And yeah, there's a couple of crossovers and working together, but we've known each other a long time, and we had lost touch. And I actually saw Andy again online where he'd taken on a challenge, which he was doing for a reason, which again, he'll talk about on here. And I reached out to say hello again, and we reconnected. And from there, we've been talking, and yeah, it's very interesting and similar journey of in industry, out industry, and why. So again, not giving too much away, but we'll talk to Andy here and talk through. But yeah, it's going to be a good episode. I think there's some great content here. There's some discussion points that we need to raise and talk about and be aware of. So that's the purpose of this episode today, and continue the conversation from the previous episodes also together.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. And obviously, the purpose of a podcast is that we talk. And I know that Andy is going to be talking a lot about how we should talk more. So let's get right into it. So Andy, welcome to the Running Industry Alliance podcast. Really grateful to you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, it's really nice to be here.
Hi, Andy. It's lovely to see you again and talk to you on here. I wanted to kind of ask you, because we've obviously known each other for a long time in the trade, in the running industry, and moving around the circles of that over the years, over many years. It was great to reconnect recently, and obviously I've been seeing the great work that you've been doing and are doing in this space. Could you talk to me and the audience and Matt a bit more about that and about your kind of personal journey that's got you to kind of In The Now How today?
I'll try and condense it into a quick elevator pitch, if you like, of how I got to sitting in front of you both now. So I spent pretty much 20 years in the sports industry. So I mean, before that started, my kind of journey into sport, if you like, started running at 16. My father, John Kane, was a pretty decent athlete. He was involved in sport all of his life. One of the founders of the Great North Run. So kind of my entire life as a kid anyway, I was surrounded by, you know, some of the best athletes, Olympic medalists, world champions, record holders, you know, Brendan Crammy, Mickey McLeod, you know, Charlie Spedding, dad, Mike Tagg, all these guys that anybody in the distance running fraternity will know that they were some of the best. And so I kind of had this, I always had sport really around me all the time, and then started running, found out I was pretty good at it. And then pretty quickly, started to shoot up the ranks and then wanted to go further. So I ended up at Loughborough University doing sports science, bit of engineering in there as well. And, again, just like immersed in the best in the country, a lot of guidance from some amazing coaches, coach at the time, Lindsay Dunn, Stan Long, George Gandhi. And, actually, sadly, all three of them are not here anymore with us. But, so, you know, just like some of the most amazing people to have a huge influence on my life. And then kind of continued through the Loughborough University, continued running really well, and then got up to, make world championship level, world cross country championships as a senior. So started to really tick off some of my goals, and then realized that I also wanted a career as well. And at that time, loving sports so much. And I ended up joining Nike in 2003. And I was still running at the time, but I was kind of winding it down a bit then. But ironically, started to run even better when I got a full-time job. And Nike were incredibly supportive as well. And it was just such an amazing culture to be in. And we'll probably come on to talk about cultures and the different brands because I changed a few. And did Nike for 5 years on the commercial side, ended up managing the JD business on the footwear side, which was the biggest in the UK, one of the biggest in Europe. And just really getting immersed into the whole the Nike, the corporation, basically, and how big corporations work. And it was such an incredible time. And then actually left Nike after 5 years and became the elite race director for the Great North Run series. So effectively going to work for dad, if you like, but he'd stepped out of the business by then, thank goodness. But working really closely, reporting into Brendan Foster. It was the build up of 2012. So it was incredible. It was the sport in the UK. Everything was just, I mean, you all remember that buzz, right? And it was just an incredible time to be involved in elite sport in the UK with our best athletes across swimming. We were hosting the Great City Games. You know, I was in charge of bringing Usain Bolt into Manchester. After 2012, it was kind of like, right, now what for me? And I wasn't seeing anything else really that I wanted to get involved with in the elite space. So I was invited to go back to join Puma UK. By my good friend at the time, Paul Spencer, who was the GM, and moved back into the commercial there. But ironically, just looking after the lifestyle side of the business for Puma in the UK and Benelux. So I never really actually touched performance product at Nike or Puma. I was always in charge of lifestyle, of fashion, if you want to call it that, sneaker culture. So I'm quite a bit of a fan of sneaker culture. You know, all the trendy sneakers now were actually all performance shoes back in the 70s, 80s, or wherever the trend's going. Moved through Puma, ended up going out to the Netherlands, and then actually jumped ship. Foot Locker, who I was looking after at the time, invited me to join the other side of the table and be buying director for Foot Locker Europe, which was a huge responsibility. 650 stores plus e-com, half of their European turnover. So sales budget of 800 million a year, all the men's footwear division. So it was a huge responsibility, and it was really, it was an incredible opportunity actually to learn both sides of the table. So I'd done brand a lot, commercial brand, and then moving into, moving onto the other side of the table, literally, and dealing with all of my mates at all the brands, you know, which was challenging as well. But it was great to see how all the brands work, all of their strategies, pulling our own strategy together. And obviously because we were Foot Locker, we had a big influence over the brand strategies as well. So it was really amazing to be in that position. At the time things started to come up in me and I wasn't feeling like I was really contributing much to humanity. Like what am I doing here? I'm just selling millions of pairs of shoes a year. And a real question started to come up inside me of like, what am I doing here? I'm just reporting, you know, crunching numbers to report to shareholders, to keep churning those quarterly returns. And because of that, crazy decisions were being made that just didn't align with actually doing the right thing, actually. And that's when it really started to bring something up inside me around, this is not what I'm here for. And it kind of really questioned purpose. And this is where classically burnout actually occurs, when you can be really competent at your job, but if you feel as if your job has no purpose or you're ineffective or you're not effective at making change that really impacts, then this is where burnout occurs people become very apathetic. I became very apathetic towards my role. It was like, what am I doing here? Like, I was great at it. And theoretically, I loved it. It was on paper, but this kind of crunch and it was an extremely high pressure environment as well. In brands, you have kind of these quarterly waves, you know, you peak in your trough, a bit like in the event industry, you build up the event and then it calms off, then you go again. But yeah, with retail, it is like, it is 365 always on. Retail always looks back. My experience was there never seems to be a big strategy going forward. It's like, how do we anniversary sales on this day that we did last year? But brands are very different. Brands always have a five-year forward plan. Retailers are very reactive. Brands are very responsive, which interestingly comes on to talk, which we'll talk about in a bit, about the difference between actually responding versus reacting just from a nervous system state. And you make the right decisions when you respond, not when you react. So it kind of came in a bit of a crunch, and I just started questioning a lot of things. And with that, I actually noticed that just my general satisfaction with life started to take a big hit, really. And I decided to effectively get out of a 20-year corporate road that I was on. And it was like, I need some space. Yeah, I need to get out and reevaluate my direction. And my getting out coincided with the start of COVID, which was not a great time at all. Mm. And then I got stuck effectively pretty much 12 months without a job, because at the time, obviously in the industry, nobody was really, I mean, everyone was locked down, right? Unless you were a specialist in e-com, nobody cared about anything else. You know, wholesale wasn't even operating. So that in itself then became a really challenging position for me to be in as well mentally. So I decided to step out. So I had no job title. You know, the title on LinkedIn that everybody, you know, my was my identity, like, you know, Andy Kane, buying director, like Andy Kane, whatever. And because I had no identity there. And then my finances were getting impacted quite severely as well. I was going through divorce at the time. So again, you know, loss of relationship, loss of finances, loss of identity, out there in the world of LinkedIn it was really key. And they are the three key, the three key main elements of actually the effects that have on, and I'll talk about men here, why men actually choose to take their own lives. And I actually ended up in a real hole of depression, actually. And it was from that I started to inquire, like, what is going on with these thoughts? And I was like I was a super ambitious guy, feeling great all the time, constantly Mr. Positive. And then here I am stuck in this hole of like, I couldn't get out of bed some days, you know. It was really, and then because of that, dark thoughts started to come into play as well. And it was really not a nice time at all. So I started to learn about my head, basically, what is going on here. And that's when I started to get into mindfulness. Then I started to practice a lot with regards to meditation, movement, just learning about simple things like getting into cold water, breath work. And these things, along with the understanding of actually what goes on up here, really created a huge shift in me. It started to get me better, basically. Admittedly, it didn't get me a job, but it meant I was able to manage the overwhelm, and I was able to understand the downward cycle of thoughts that come from how we're wired upstairs, basically how I was wired upstairs. And then from that, it was a case of, wow, this is actually really something. I feel like I want to go into this space and actually help other guys, because I knew so many other people who were in the same spot. And then I decided to, things got a little bit better. I'd managed to get into a kind of a digital role in a retail startup tech company, which was interesting. I thought, I'll just give this a shot for the moment, sort me out financially. Did that for a year, and it was like, no, this is definitely, and I was still evolving my understanding of myself. And then I moved into the thought of, this is where I want to be, right? Enough of this corporate stuff. Let's get out, focus on this. What am I need to do something to, I wanted to do something straight away to try and make an impact. Cause then I started to learn about masculinity and toxic masculinity versus healthy masculinity, which is completely attached to why I ended up in the space of actually not seeking help and not talking while I was in that difficult spot. All around, you know, men toughen up, you know, boys don't cry, everything that we'll come on to talk about. And so I decided to make a bit of a statement and I decided to walk from John O'Groats to Land's End and raise money for men's mental health and suicide prevention just last year, nearly a year ago, 62 days. And so many guys came and walked with me from the industry that we all know, Bex. And I got so many messages from people saying, Andy, I'm so glad you're doing this and speaking out. I've been really struggling. What do I do? Just like amazing. Thank you so much for sharing actually what I'm going through, and also men and women. And again, so many people you and I know, Bex, from the industry.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, the stat in itself, it took me 62 days to walk. The stat is that over those 62 days, 900 men in the UK would have taken their lives, you know. And actually, as I was walking, there were people that I knew who unfortunately decided to do that. And Bex, you and I know people from the industry who've unfortunately done that, and it's still going on, you know.
And yeah, similar. We've had similar paths together, and I work with Paul at Adidas, and you know, we've had very, very similar parallel. Which and it's actually when I saw you walking, which is when I reached out again, because I'd not seen you for a kind of while on LinkedIn or across LinkedIn. But yeah, it's I totally resonate with everything that you said. I was kind of 15 years in that, and then I'm 16 years kind of out of that, kind of running and working and with purpose and, you know, helping the running industry. But it's yes, I totally resonate everything that you're saying there completely. And I think a lot of our listeners here will resonate completely with that as well. And thanks for sharing that, Andy.
Yeah. And that's essentially what made me then start, right, okay, how do I bring this to other people to benefit other people? And that's essentially where In the Now How came up. In the Now How, obviously all about being in the present moment, in the now, and practices in order to get us out of our head. Because when we're in our head, we're time traveling, you know, ruminating on the past, which is what depression is, or worrying about the future, which is what anxiety is. So right now, what I do now is I work with companies, business, corporates, helping. Actually, my angle is actually about developing high performing teams, high performing individuals, using these practices. And then from that also you can tap into to great things like greater creativity, great innovation. Because when we get caught up in our thoughts and stress and anxiety bubbles over, it actually shuts down part of our brain that we use for creativity and innovation. So the more stressed we are, the less productive in everything we actually are, and also not managing to remain balanced in our relationships and the way that we respond to others as well, never mind ourselves. So and I do one-to-one coaching with guys, run men's retreats. Yeah, and it's just like, it's such an incredibly amazing space to be in there and having such an impact.
It's a really interesting journey, Andy, obviously, and a lot of stuff there resonates with me as a man of a certain age. We all know that the route of self-employment is sometimes a very lonely one as well, which is quite ironic when it comes to people and performance and that sort of thing. I'm interested in what the switch was, if that makes sense, and the moment of enlightenment, for want of a better word, and the serendipity where you kind of go, do you know what? The corporatism that I'm engrossed in and not enjoying here, I've got to get out. Was there a defining moment? Was there a time when you just woke up one day, you get your coffee, you walk into an office, for instance, is there a moment when you just go, I cannot do this anymore, I've got to make a change?
Yeah, there were several moments, but you know what, it's been really hard to let go of it. And it's called the golden handshake. I've heard it referred to as the golden handshake. Right, the corporate prison, if you want to call it that. And it's very different because I'm on the entrepreneur side now, which I've not known at all. And yet all my life I've been, I want to be my own boss. I want to do my own thing, but I ended up on the corporate pathway. And it's been really hard to let go of that. Oh, I could just get a job and just have that income constant every month and be in a house, buy a house in 3 months and all that safety, the safetiness of it, but you're not safe. You've just got to look at how COVID turned things in and out, and a lot of the brands out there restructure every 2 years now anyway, so nobody's safe no matter how long you've been there. And again, it's like the fear and the belief in myself of going into the unknown, and this is the thing that holds us back, right? This thing about comfort zone. But for me, there was a few times where, like, one of the key moments was when a close friend of mine actually, do you know what, Andy, there's something about your, you need to sort your ego out a bit. And it really kind of impacted me at that point in my life. And I was like, oh, what does that even mean? And so I looked into it, and this is where I ended up going about, well, what is the ego? What is this? What is that? And what a thought? Well, not a thought. What do you mean I'm not my thoughts? What am I then if I'm not who the hell's thinking them? And I just went down this. And of course, the first book I picked up was Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now, which every sentence, I don't know if you guys are aware of it, but it just every sentence blows your brain. And it's all about that disconnection of actually, who am I then? And this is the whole purpose of meditation. Meditation, you distance yourself from your thoughts. So you see your thoughts, but you allow them to pass by. But that was a real point in me of like, ah, okay, I'm not my behaviors. I'm not my thoughts. Oh, that means I must be able to change them then. And it was a real moment for me of, I knew I was aware of myself, but I wasn't aware enough and like wanting to change it. And this person had an impact on me to go, oh, wow, I really don't like that person saw me that way. I'm going to change. Because of that moment, that made me then realize, ah, in that case, then, am I just doing this job because of the conditioning and expectations that I feel like society has put on me to go to school, go to university, get a job, have family, have kids, retire, I'm done? Like, what even is that? I even questioned the point, why did I run? To the point where, like, was I running just to get attention from my father when I was a young kid? Because dad worked away a lot, super busy, you know, Great North Run. He was responsible for setting up Nike in the 80s in Europe and UK. You know, like a lot of people. And it was like, wow. And then I suddenly started running. I got started to get attention from dad. I was like, so subconsciously, what is going on there, you know? And this is when they talk about, Carl Jung talks about, if we don't bring the unconscious into the conscious, it will always run our life behind the scenes. And this is when you start to get into psychology about shadow work. If we don't, if we're not aware of our childhood traumas, or, you know, things that have impacted us as between the ages of 0 and 7 or younger life, these, if we're not aware of them through deep work with your therapist or whatever, they pull the strings and they actually influence our behaviors without knowing it. And this is where our personality traits come from, if they're not made aware of. So a lot of things there, but it was kind of around that moment of understanding more about myself. Then it was questioning, why am I doing this? And, oh, maybe I don't want to do this.
Quite often when you're backed into that corner, I'd say, Andy, you know, whereby you are, it's, you know, fight or flight. There's all of those things coming in. You know, what do? You freeze? Do you carry on? Do you push ahead? Do you stop? Do you think? Sometimes they can be really good for us, aren't we, as people, as human beings, because even though you look back on them and you'll see them as very dark times, very seen them as times when actually it was a real difficult time in my life. Actually, the things happen for a reason quite often, don't they? You know, and quite often different personality types, you know, you can react differently in those situations. But obviously for you, it brought out, I'll use the word, a good side in the fact that you think, right, I'm going to go down this direction now of in the now how, which actually is, seems to have been a great outcome for you.
It's funny, you know, when I realized that, or rather when I decided to just go full on, right, stop messing around, go after this, like channel my energy completely on it, focus on that one thing. As soon as I did that, doors started opening for me. It was, and you can talk about spiritual woo-woo stuff, which I always like a bit of woo-woo at the same time as logic, but at the same time, or like the inexplainable, or the non-rational versus the rational, not irrational, non-rational. When you align, or when I aligned everything, and I discovered what my truth was, what I really wanted, then I started to go, right, if that's what I want to do, then this is how I'm going to do it. As soon as I did that, it's almost as if the universe, here's the woo-woo bit, just went, right, finally, you've worked it out. Now, here you go. There's your pathway straight ahead of you. Go for it. And everything actually started to come to me. I wasn't really projecting out there. I've not done any paid advertising. I've not pushed any advertising. I post a bit on LinkedIn and a bit on Instagram about, you know, stuff that I'm doing. And from that, people see it and they go, oh, can you come and do this? Or can you come and do that? And because I'm being really aligned with my authenticity and who I am, then my belief is actually I come across that way and people believe it and trust it. Now, if I go back to when I was in this kind of moment of, do I let go of corporate? Do I just do a job and I do this on the side? That there was so many kind of like worries and stuff going on. Because I was in that moment of that point of indecision, and I wasn't really kind of fully committed, then it was almost as if I was confusing everything I was putting out. The way I put myself out to the world was almost like a bit confusing. Also, people were like, maybe I don't get quite what he's doing, and maybe he doesn't look quite as authentic, and don't really trust that. Or do you know what I mean? It's like this unconscious, it's intuition that people pick up from us, from each other. We are just animals at the end of the day. And so whether we like it or not, we've got this sixth sense, which is called intuition. And we hear it sometimes, and sometimes we don't, you know.
And in a way that, you know, by getting out of the corporate bubble, for want of a better word, you know, you weren't able to hide behind the veneer, were you, of a brand, of an association, of, you know, a buying group, for instance, or a big retailer. Now the real Andy Kane obviously comes to the fore. Does that make sense?
Yeah, not behind a title as well, because titles are, we taught this, Andy, as well, didn't we? We're totally kind of inbuilt from young of, and I'm, you know, I was as well, very traditional of like, you do this, 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 and then, you know, that results in that. And yeah, totally to chat through that. And I think confidence and ego gets mixed up, because I think you need to be confident to do some of the roles you're doing in the industry, but then that gets confused with ego as well.
But then the flip side of coming onto this entrepreneurial side of things is it's like every day is like, I've got infinite choices. Where in you're in a corporate, you don't, you have one choice. And there's your box, you stay in it, and that's what you do, and there's your lane, and you don't move from it. But then this, and this, almost this worry about waking up every morning going, what am I doing? Where am I going?
Yep.
And it's like, wow, it's like, I flipped the perspective, and that's like, wow, it's like, if I want to, I can choose to go over there today, or I can go over there tomorrow, I can do it. No one's going there. And so long as it, so long as I check in with myself, it's like, right, why am I doing this? What is it I'm seeking here? You know, like even things like me working with some of the big brands, I know for a fact that my ego is involved in that. I want to prove to people that actually this decision I've made, which was a really brave one, and people might call it, I've heard people saying that Kaney's lost his marbles, you know, and that's actually pretty judgmental and not very nice to hear, because they came from people I knew, right? So it's like, it's all, there's a point in me, it's like, I want to prove to people this decision I made was actually the right one.
Yeah, I might offer Andy that you found your marbles.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Big bag of them. Massive bag.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think sometimes when people are immersed as well in certain roles and also would like to be doing different things, but so immersed, don't know how to kind of change or get out. And it is a risk sometimes and a leap of faith. I think you naturally draw together with people that are like-minded, and I think things have changed over the years. I think it was exceptionally toxic in certain parts of the industry in the early days. I mean, I was in it from 19, and you don't always realize until you come out and kind of look back. And I think things have changed. A lot are trying to change. You're working with a lot of brands as well, aren't you, across the industry? And there's more awareness than there was. I know we're going to focus on men today particularly. But yeah, I think things are changing. I think there's a lot to do, but I think things are more aware. I think people are more aware.
One thing, obviously, you do a lot of work, Andy, at the moment with, you know, businesses across sectors. So we're not just talking about, obviously, this is the Running Industry Alliance podcast. But you obviously branched out and you started to work, as you say, with the insurance companies, et cetera. One striking fact that I've seen, it's at any one time, 1 in 6 people of the working age population of Britain experience symptoms associated with mental ill health. I found that quite stark when I saw it. You know, when you kind of think of, for instance, let's say there's 10 million working people. You know, there's out there, there's kind of like 1.5 million are struggling.
Yeah.
That's quite a big figure.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't, like across the industries that I'm working in, I mean, at the weekend I was at a project in Devon called the CIP Project, Change is Possible, run by Michael Maisie. And he works with ex-offenders, people who've just come out of prison, or people on heavy addictions. Spending the weekend with those guys, and again, just sharing the knowledge and things that I picked up. And then on Tuesday, I'm in Canary Wharf, dealing with working with a bunch of great people from just a big insurance business, you know, $1.5 billion in the UK. And it doesn't matter where I go or who I'm working with or whether I'm working with athletes, whatever. It's the issues are always the same, and it is always simply down to manage like overwhelm, literally mental overwhelm, and within that, helping people reframe. But you can't reframe when you're in these positions of overwhelm. And it's all about helping them to, you know, actually do practices and get into spaces where they can essentially self-regulate their nervous system down into a more calm, relaxed state. Because from that state, that's where you can make logical, innovative, creative decisions. You can think clearly because the part of your brain that thinks clearly isn't shut down. That's what happens when you get into stress. So it's just this basic understanding of how the things go on upstairs, which effectively push us into wherever you are in life, push you into states of mental anguish, mental, you know, worry. Of course, then the knock on from that is how that impacts our physical health, how it impacts your diet, how it impacts your sleep, how it impacts your relationships. It's so prevalent across everywhere in society. I mean, even our children now.
And just leading on from that, you've got on, you know, on the website, teaching life-changing interventions by utilizing technology. So if that's the case, and if you're going to some of these businesses and you've seen that, how are you kind of like utilizing your skill sets and how, you know, the offering at the in now, how you can actually help people within these businesses?
It's essentially like an understanding of them, how to work with their mind and their thoughts. And it's like to get an understanding of that first. Ultimately, these experiences that I take into these businesses give people the permission to actually give themselves some space to switch off. And it's funny how a company has to bring somebody like me in order to help people understand how to switch off. And so literally it's like, first of all, switching off from your life, which very often means putting the phone down for starts, you know, turning the TV off and actually, and not allowing yourself to be distracted. And of course, then some people say to me, oh, what do you mean? Sit with my own thoughts. Oh God, I don't want to do that. That's what I'll be left with. It's like, well, that's the starting point. And then of course, when you're in that space, then it's about, okay, right, how do you really drop in to actually complete present moment awareness? And this is where the understanding of allowing the experience to help people, essentially the only way to drop into the present moment is actually to the easiest way is to attach yourself to senses. So say in meditation, the easiest thing to do, because people say, well, am I meditating properly or not? And the easiest way is to get them to do a body scan. And what I mean by that is actually sitting still. This sounds crazy, I know, if you're not used to it, but sitting still and sensing, see if you can feel into different parts of your body. So it could be like, right, put your awareness into your feet. Can you feel your feet? And most people are so cut off from actually sensing their body, what's going on, is they can't even do this. And of course, if you can't sense what's going on in your body, well, what also can't you sense and what you aren't tuned into? You're not tuned into your intuition. For example, focus on your breath. So breathing in, breathing out. Now, if you're focusing on that, you can't focus on a breath in the past or one in the future because they don't exist. So when you're on your breath all the time, you're only in that moment. And when you're on the breath, you're not in your head because you can't do two things at once. And so when you're not in your head, then you're not caught up in the thoughts of that might be making you anxious or stressed. So if you're in a real state of overwhelm, could be a mortgage payment coming through, you know, that you can't pay. It could be like positive, like a job interview coming up. So this works both ways about managing stress. So it's taking a deep breath. And literally that's where all these little sayings come from, you know, count to 10, you know, take a deep breath. It's because when you do that, when you're focusing on your breath, you're not in your head because it's the thoughts that can spiral us off, you see. So simple things like teaching guys to meditate, teaching people how to use breath work, which is a really amazing tool. It can go really, really deep. It can actually go all the way into allowing emotions that we've pushed down for years to come up as well. Again, because what keeps us from expressing ourselves is the thoughts up here of like, oh, I can't scream or shout. I can't dance down the street because I'm happy. I can't do this because it's all fear of judgment, right? It could be other stuff as well. Like I do a lot of work with cold water therapy, ice baths, and they are insanely good for pulling the plug on any anxious thoughts you might be having, because what happens when you get in the ice? It's cold. How do you know it's cold? Because you're feeling what your body's doing and you're feeling this for 4 minutes. So if you're not in your head for 4 minutes, that's giving the circuit breaker potentially something that you might have had, you know, you might be dealing with difficulty. Now I find that every day I wake up straight in the cold and it's like a reboot straight away. It could be other things as well, like movement, mindful movement. And this could be things like yoga, just walking in nature, simple things like that, you know, put the phone away, anything that you're focused on, like colors of plants, just the smell of the air, all of this stuff that is happening right now, if you're focused on it, then you're not in your head. And when you're not in your head, you're not in your thoughts. And you have 90,000 thoughts a day. 90% of those are from the day before. And most of the time I'm playing over scenarios that are never going to happen, but my body doesn't know that. I can get stressed about a thought that's not going to happen. But that thought in my head, that story I'm building, is creating chemical changes and discharges in my body because my body's then reacting to this stressful situation that doesn't even exist. And this is where this getting caught in a spiral of anxious thoughts impacts our health, because if it's pushing me into a stressful situation, as in pushing me into fight or flight, more adrenaline, more noradrenaline, more cortisol, what happens in fight or flight is your immune system gets shut down. Now, if you're shutting your immune system down 40, 50, 60 times a day with emails coming in or road rage, or then my immune system is going to be constantly shut down. It also shuts down my reproductive system. It also shuts down my digestive system. It screws up my sleep. So this is why it's really important to give yourself space and time to get away, to get out your head and into the present moment, to basically give you that space.
I love talking to you, as you know, but I do love our conversations, and it does make me think, because I felt, and we've talked about this, you know, more that I'm my authentic self now than I used to be. And that has taken time to kind of be that. And, you know, everything you see with the three of us here is what you get, which I think is important as well. When we were talking the other day, I just wanted to kind of go back into a little bit, not the whole conversation, but kind of how overwhelming life can be. And we talked about how trust is key as well. And I think that's inbuilt into a lot that you do. And just kind of wanted to just talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah, I guess from this perspective, this is all about, for me, it's about, yeah, feeling safe. So as human beings, we want two things. We want to belong, feel belonging. So feeling love, feeling belonging in a relationship or in a group, colleagues, work, whatever. And we want to be able to be authentic. So I want to be Andy Kane. This is me as you see me. I'm not wearing any masks. This is how I am. Take me or leave me. And I also want to belong. So does everybody in my tribe, call it my group, do they know me? They completely see me. And no matter all my good stuff, my bad stuff, it's like they're still here for me. They're not going anywhere. So when my authenticity jeopardizes my belonging, as in, ooh, I can't be as loud and as crazy as I want to be because the group get a bit funny with me and I might get kicked out of the group. And this is a survival mechanism. So when we all lived in caves and there was animals out there walking around that would eat us, obviously safety in numbers, what it meant was if I was ejected from the group, it would actually mean I would die. I'd get kicked out of the cave, the whatever, where we lived, into the deep, dark forest, and I'd probably be eaten by a tiger within the night, you know? So this is a survival mechanism within us. So basically, if my authenticity jeopardizes my safety and belonging, I'm going to change myself in order to fit in. And this is where fitting in is not the same as belonging. So I'm not my authentic self. And what happens here is when I'm actually pushing down my authentic self, this creates an imbalance, a discomfort in me of like, oh, I'm not really being myself here. And this is essentially whereby psychological safety within the group comes from, I trust everybody around me that I can be myself and they'll accept me. And then from that, where does trust then become cultivated? It comes from deep, honest conversations. It comes from me saying, hey, Matt, Bex, today, I feel really bad, actually. I don't think I can do this. And so because of this, we end up, and this is particularly the situation with men, and certainly my situation is I just kept plowing on, like, and things were building up, and I ended up going the wrong way of becoming reclusive and really not sharing anything, and that was the worst thing I could have done, the difference between isolation and solitude. So solitude is really powerful, as in, taking time to go away, be in nature for a couple of days, switch off and just reconnect with self, as in like, oh, what do I really feel about this thing with nothing else kind of getting in the way? But isolation is really dangerous, and isolation, loneliness is now being billed as the new smoking. And a lot of this is down to actually trust is built through vulnerability and actually understanding that somebody maybe is honesty. It's like, I haven't got this. I can't do this. Or saying no when somebody comes up with another bit of work. It's like, hey, I really need this bit of work done. I'm sorry, I can't do this.
So in the International Men's Day in November, obviously it's going to be a significant milestone in what you do as well, particularly Andy. But what are you going to be focusing on in terms of that week, you know, supporting men and hopefully getting this message out there?
It's an International Men's Day. Which is November the 19th. So around, obviously, and that's a Sunday. So around that space, there's obviously going to be a lot of things going on. And that is all to do with actually zero male suicide. That is their main focus. And that's about, again, going back to the fact that men don't talk because we have been conditioned by society, the old patriarch, if you want to call it that, of provide, protect, conquer, you know, don't show emotions. Like I was saying, keep calm, carry on, toughen up. All of the stuff, you know, the Marlboro Man, you know, everything that the 1960s, 1970s films sort of build. And that's why 3/4 of suicides in the UK are men. You know, 440, the equivalent of 440 football teams a year in the UK of men die.
Yeah.
They take their life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something like 13 a day, 13 men a day. For me, in that week particularly, the work I'm going to be doing and offering as well is all around getting guys comfortable with talking, getting guys comfortable with actually saying, I've not got my stuff together, actually. I'm really having a tough time. And what happens there is when one person gives, and these will be in workshops that I run, and it's done on communicational practices, simple stuff. And it's all, and as soon as a lot of the work I do, I work in a lot of men's groups, men's spaces where a lot of men come together. We do men's retreats, and I work with a guy called David Miller up in Scotland. And basically, it is all down to trust. And as soon as a guy feels like he can trust the men around him, he feels safe, he feels like he belongs, no matter how he shows up, then he'll share that he's having difficulty in one thing. And then as soon as that happens, another guy will then go. So typically what happens is a guy might share, and then I might say, does anybody else here in this group relate to what Matt is saying? Can anybody else in this group, or does anybody else in this group have something different to Matt's experience? And as soon as one guy goes, then that it's like popcorn. Then they all start going, oh, this is a safe space. And stuff then flows. And in some cases, it can flow really extremely. Like I've been in a lot of spaces where guys have, there's a lot of power in men being there for other men. To actually be able to be seen, and that's what we want to be seen for our authenticity, right? And what seen means is doesn't mean being fixed. It's like just, this is the other skill set as well, as there's the skill set and the comfort in being able to communicate how I'm feeling. And the flip side of that is, say, Matt, you came to me and you were like, hey, Andy, I need to share with you, I'm having a really tough time. It's my skill set in me to then just sit and listen. And not to interject, not go, oh yeah, yeah, me too. Oh yeah, yeah, I get it when I do that. Or even lads banter, oh come on, Matt, don't be such a, you know, like, oh, you're kidding me, you're doing this again. Like, that is not safe. And also just the capability of me to just sit and listen and also inquire into you a little bit deeper about how you're feeling about stuff. It's like, you might come to me and say, hey, Andy, I'm really struggling with this. How does that make you feel, Matt? And you'd be like, mate, I feel really sad actually. Or like really tapping into emotions. And this is where me as a guy and other men and men generally, we've not been allowed to express our emotions. So I didn't know what to feel. What the hell do you mean feel? Well, I'm not doing that. You know, all this conditioning, because we've been told to operate from our shoulders and above, not to feel anything. That for International Men's Week, Men's Day, it's for me, it's all about getting guys connected with expressing their feelings and expressing their feelings in a mature, constructive way. It's okay to express anger. Anger is a really important emotion. And this is the challenge in society now. It's like, if a guy is angry, he's considered toxic. No. It's aggression. When anger turns to aggression, when anger is directed at somebody, that becomes aggressive. Sarcastic comments are aggressive. It's passive aggressive. Like even eye movements, like rolling your eyes. Say if you come to me and you have a problem and I roll my eyes, I'm like do a tut and roll my eyes. That's passive aggressive. Like expressing anger is okay because it shows that you've had a boundary violated. You've had a boundary overstep that maybe you weren't clear about, but it shows that you've had something. Oh, I didn't realize that was a boundary for me. Hey, you know, Matt, I want to share with you that actually what was done before, you know, it brought up a lot of anger in me. And so this is the skill as well about training guys to be articulate in expressing their emotions, how to listen properly, how to hold space. And then obviously that then can pass out to everywhere else in their lives, to their loving relationships with their partners, to their children. Like I'm teaching my children now how to do this, and it's amazing.
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating stuff, isn't it? It's deep, it's emotive.
Yeah.
It is very, very, very powerful.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, I think there's a couple of things from talking, Andy. I think there's obviously the work you're doing is very, very much required. We obviously want to work with you to highlight your work and also to have resources available. So I was just going to say, in terms of that being aware as well, I think that's one of the missing pieces. I don't think people are always aware.
Mm.
Of this, or aware of how they're behaving or why they're behaving. So I think going back to that kind of source and is important. But I think there is so much to do that what we will do is put some, it's obviously going to be the show notes from here. We will put some resource and links onto the website as well. And I think also kind of those next steps and what to do and how to get in contact with you as well.
Time is always against us in these situations. Wish it wasn't, Andy, to be perfectly honest. But just, I suppose, to round out our kind of reasonably brief but very, very powerful conversation, what would be, if somebody's sat there now and they are the Andy Kane of 2019 or 20, they may well be in this industry, they may be listening to this podcast and they be thinking, that's me, looking, you know, they're reflecting back at them in the mirror. What are some of the steps that people can use practically, but also maybe just, you know, physically and on, and to kind of to bring themselves to a bit more of a realization and hopefully big word, but a bit more happiness in what they're doing with their lives?
Walk 900 miles.
In a nutshell, let's say that not everyone can do that, even though I'd like to.
Yeah. Do you know what? Space is really key. And this is space from your environment, space from your thoughts, space where you can actually really tap into what you want. And this takes a bit of practice because, it's hard to get out of the busyness of the head. It's hard to get out of the busyness of chaos life around you. You've got family, you've got kids, you've got, you know, job commitments, you know, and space can be in the form of exercise, you know. I mean, all these key things like good sleep. I mean, sleep affects everything, you know. Like, just look at every part of your life. Where are you not optimizing? And this is my whole perspective on my angle is high-performing individual. If you can be a high-performing self, what does that mean? It means, like, you know what your sender is and you know what pulls you off sender. So for me to be on my game, I need this much sleep. I need to be eating this food. I need to be drinking this. I need to be socializing with these people or not with those people. I've not watched the news for like 3 years. I don't have a TV. I just don't watch TV anymore. So it's like, not only be careful what you're eating and putting in your body, be careful what you're also listening to, what you're seeing, you know, how much time you spend on blue light digital screens, you know, that all the research there that affects so much, even sleep, you know, magnesium levels, all these little tiny things, get into nature. It's like, it's all the free stuff, right? All this stuff is the free stuff. And yet everything points us over to having to buy the stuff to keep the other things going, right? So it's like pull things right back, keep things simple, slow things down, and then find somebody, not saying me, but find somebody who you can actually also share and be open and vulnerable with your problems with as well. Like, not necessarily fix, just somebody to sit and listen, just say, hey, I need to share some with you. Can you just listen to me? I just want to get this off my chest. I don't need fixing. You know, like set your own boundaries of what you want as well. And because it's difficult. A lot of people we're not trained in this stuff from school. Like, this stuff should be in school, like how to listen, how to talk. It's not. I had to wait 42 years before I, you know, tripped up and thought I better learn this.
I think it's being aware of those around you as well. If you see somebody struggling, is have just chat to them, you know, just have a chat. And I think health is wealth is coming up quite a lot at the moment, which is also awareness that that's mental and physical health and movement, and it's not the wealth we were traditionally taught to be aware of. So
yeah, and that's another thing as well, is if you notice somebody, one of your colleagues, one of your friends, and say, oh, like, if you notice something that isn't quite right, like, trust your intuition on this. Absolutely trust your intuition. And this is what I'm talking about, intuition. But be careful, because when you say to that person, hey, I've noticed, you know, are you okay? They'll go, oh, yeah, fine. And then the easy reaction for most people is, okay, I was just checking. Thanks anyway. Right, she'll go off and don't. Pause and ask again. No, like, I've noticed this. Like, how are you doing? And then pause and don't say anything. And the like, power of silence breaks people. And that's always the a lot of the times I've bumped into complete strangers and noticed something and I've asked again, and then I just sit and you just wait, and then the truth comes. Very easy to just dismiss and move on. And that's actually one of the assist training I did with Papyrus suicide prevention, and all the other, you know, Samaritans do this as well and so on. But that's one of the key things, is when you notice something, don't dismiss it. Challenge it in a nice way, not like challenge hard, but, you know, just be there for that person.
Absolutely fantastic advice. My closing thoughts would be, Andy, that Bex and I have had quite a few conversations in the last two or three episodes around women within the industry, and obviously, you know, about how within the UK running industry, or certainly within a global running industry, it's quite male-based, it's quite masculine, shall we say, has been historically. That is changing. But what hopefully people will be listening to this podcast, and I really do hope we get a lot of people listening to the podcast, because it's been really powerful. I think it's been very relevant. And I think the fact that you've brought it into the context of, look, you've been on the other side of the fence, and you've actually seen that actually we do need to start talking a bit more. For me, it's been really, really powerful. I'm really grateful, Andy.
Thank you, Matt. And the conversation around masculinity in the industry, well, that's definitely, we could do another podcast on that, because that's actually ultimately the foundation of all the work I'm doing, is around cultivating healthy masculinity. And when you look into the psychology behind this, a lot of Carl Jung stuff, it's especially around the archetypes and shadow archetypes, when you look at this and then you go, ah, there it all is. And it's really clear. It's so, and the impact that has on women, and the impact that has on women being able to be full in their own feminine and be full women, then you started going to that and it's like, oh yeah, now I get it. It's really powerful.
Thanks, Andy. We'll bring some of this life together as well, Andy, across kind of the various channels with Running Industry Alliance and at the Running Conference as well. So thank you very much. And thank you for all your support. It's always good talking to you, and thanks for sharing on here as well.
Thank you for having me, guys. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Andy. Well, Bex, what a great conversation with Andy there.
Yeah, very, very powerful, as we have said through talking through. I think it's good to talk about the topics, the industry, the work we're doing, and the work Andy's doing. I think there is a general kind of awakening and awareness more, and I think it's good to kind of start those conversations and also to have those kind of discussions around the stats and facts and information. And as we said, we'll make sure there is some resources available also on the show notes, but also on the website, runningindustryalliance.com, on the news section, for anybody that wants to go further and also to contact Andy. His details will be on there also.
Brilliant. Thanks once again, Bex, for everything you've done for these topics within the industry, because I think it's really important.
Thank you, Matt. And thank you for the time together. It's, the continual conversation absolutely is important. And we've got some guests in the next couple of episodes again to continue the conversation. So do subscribe, you know, be part of the journey with us. And thanks for all the support, everybody.
Yeah, thanks very much. See you next time.
See you then.
The Running Industry Alliance podcast is produced by Supersonic Podcasts and presented by myself, Matt Ward. We would be so grateful, of course, if you could subscribe and follow wherever you get your podcasts. And you can follow us on social media via @Running Industry Alliance. And if you're part of the running industry and want to find out more about the Running Industry Alliance and how you could be a member, just head to our website at www.runningindustryalliance.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back with another episode real soon. See ya.